This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, the Senate is currently debating the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. We'll get the latest on that. And there is a lot of anticipation regarding President Trump's State of the Union address tomorrow night before a joint session of Congress. Will the president take a victory lap for the policy victories of his first year? Will he cast a vision for what's ahead? What are members of Congress hoping to hear? We'll talk about that with Missouri Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler in just a moment. Also, could the announcement that Planned Parenthood's President Cecile Richards, the fact that she's stepping down, be an effort to put a new face on an organization that has come under scrutiny by Congress and now the Department of Justice for alleged criminal activity? Kathy Ruth, Senior Fellow for Legal Studies at FRC, will answer that question later on Washington Watch. And I had a very insightful trip to Guatemala last week to meet with President Jimmy Morales and members of his cabinet. I'll talk about that. And a great event in Marshall, Texas, that I was privileged to be the keynote speaker for this past Saturday night. It's something I believe every community in America would benefit from. And I'll have the details about that later here on Washington Watch. I'll also be taking your phone calls, so stick around. Don't go anywhere. Hey, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, it's all archived right there. There's also information, and there's a few seats available. I checked this weekend to see how we were doing. And there's just a few seats left for our Israel trip coming up April the 17th through the 27th. This is going to be a great trip. We'll have former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann will be with us, General Boykin, our own three-star general will be with us on that trip, as well as Ken Blackwell, former ambassador for human rights to the UN, will be with us as well. So we're going to have a great time. Joel Rosenberg also be with us a part of that trip. So find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, but do so quickly because we're almost out of time. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, before we jump to the President's State of the Union address, earlier, just a little bit ago, Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut was on the Senate floor discussing the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. Now, let me set the stage for this, what this bill does. Now, it passed the House. It's been in the Senate, been trying to get a vote for years. And finally, we're going to have a vote here momentarily. It's a procedural vote, but nonetheless, it's a vote. What this does, this eliminates and bans abortion after 20 weeks, after 5 months of pregnancy, okay? And it's called pain capable because that's the point in which a child feels pain. And that's been testified to by medical experts in Congress who have testified before Congress. Now, keep this in mind when you listen to the comments of Senator Blumenthal. America, United States of America, is one of only seven states that allow abortion this late in the pregnancy. Well, you might ask, what are some of those seven states? Well, consider China, Russia, North Korea. Not a good group to be hanging out with. But here's Senator Blumenthal from just a few moments ago on the Senate floor.
Senator from Connecticut.
Thank you, Madam President. There's nothing Republican about this proposal. There's nothing partisan about a proposal that seeks to interfere in this fundamental right of privacy. It is an extremist right-wing proposal.
Extremist right-wing proposal. Now, bear in mind, as I just said, only seven nations in the world allow abortion this late in the pregnancy. And according to polling released just a couple of weeks ago, almost 6 in 10 Americans, almost 59% of Americans, support a ban on abortions performed after this five-month point. Extreme? Radical? Right-wing? I don't think so. All right, as I mentioned, President Trump is preparing for his first official State of the Union speech tomorrow night. According to the White House, this year's theme is building a safe, strong, and proud America. What exactly is Congress hoping to hear from the president tomorrow night? Joining us now with an answer is Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler of Missouri. She represents the 4th Congressional District. She serves on the House Armed Services Committee, and she is also the chairman of the House Values Action Team and a good friend of FRC. Vicki, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's glad to be here.
Well, before we jump into the State of the Union address, get your thoughts. The Senate right now debating the pain-capable bill. You just heard the comments from Senator Blumenthal. This passed overwhelmingly in the House. We've not been able to get a vote until now in the Senate. This is a right-wing proposal?
Well, there's somebody that has an extremist view, and it's certainly not those of us who are on the right side of this issue, the side of life and the children and basic decency. I would say he has the extremist position where a baby in the womb actually feels pain, and he's okay with dismembering it and killing it at that point. I mean, this is unbelievable how out of touch he is, and as you pointed out, the vast majority of Americans support this bill as well. So he is certainly out of touch with reality and where most Americans are on this.
Vicki, tomorrow night, the president will give his first formal State of the Union address before a joint session of Congress. I mean, I would think that the president has a few things that he could do a victory lap about. I mean, look at the tax cut, the economy's going well. What do you anticipate the president's going to talk about tomorrow night?
Well, I am looking forward to it. It's certainly refreshing to be able to have someone come and share his vision that supports what the Americans want and who has a record of achievement already that is helping everyday Americans and families by allowing them to keep more of their hard-earned dollar and allowing seeing the stock market increase, which is important for people's retirement accounts and savings accounts, and our economy is running again, and something that, you know, I care about and most people do very much is rebuilding our military. So I'm looking forward to hearing him get that message out to everyone about the good things that have happened already, but then building on that, especially with our military, I want to hear how we're going to go further to address the readiness crisis that we are in because of the lack of leadership on the behalf of President Obama. And then also, I want to hear more details about his infrastructure proposal, and we'll be especially listening as someone who represents rural America to hear his proposal for rural broadband as part of that. And then I'm certainly interested in addressing the opioid crisis that is impacting my district and others around this country, and seeing what else we can do here to curb this and turn it back.
From all indications, those are topics that he will discuss in his speech tomorrow night. Certainly national security, one of the top five issues that he will be addressing. You, Vicki, are on the House Armed Services Committee. You're tracking this very closely. You've been an outspoken voice of support for our nation's military. Let's talk a little bit about this, the current status of our military. We're at a readiness level that we have to go back to prior to World War II to be at the same status.
Oh, absolutely. We have the smallest army as before World War II, the smallest navy before World War I, and the smallest and the oldest Air Force ever. And just some things that people need to know about where we're at, because we have threats facing us everywhere, and I think Americans have the right to know that if we were called on to fight tonight, only 5 of our 58 brigade combat teams can do that. We have 50% of our nation's fighter and bomber forces that aren't able to fly and fight and decisively win tonight. 75% of our Navy aircraft cannot fly. And this past year, you know, we lost 17 sailors to two terrible Navy accidents where it was just due to lack of training and leadership that a commercial freighter collided with two different of our Navy ships, and we lost lives as a result. In fact, people need to know, last year in 2017, we lost 80 of our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines due to training accidents, and that is almost 4 times the number, which is 21, that died in combat. And this is just not acceptable. We have got to reinvest in our military to get that modernization that we need. Certainly, our enemies have not been waiting. They're not. They're moving forward, and we've got to catch up in some regards and be able to defend our nation.
Well, Congressman Vicki Hartzler, this is a very significant issue. As you pointed out, we're living in a very dangerous time. We've got North Korea, Russia on the move. We've got the Middle East that remains in turmoil. What is at the root of this issue? I mean, obviously, sequestration played a role. That was where there was a cuts to military spending. So we've had less funds going in to fund our military. But our military's also been diverted from focusing on its training in terms of winning and fighting wars with the political social policies of the previous administration, which, from what I can tell, Congresswoman, that seems to still be at play.
Yes, you're right. It's been a multi-front effort that has harmed our military. Certainly the sequestration and the severe cuts in spending has been a big part of it, but I believe it was the leadership or the lack of from our former administration that instead of prioritizing our military to win and to fight and win wars, they wanted to use our military as a social experiment and inflict on it policies that are damaging to our readiness and our morale and our retention. And one thing that we're battling right now in the courts is President Obama's decision to open up service to transgenders, which is going to divert needed defense dollars to go to other things such as sex change operations for the troops, which make them non-deployable. President Trump has tried to reverse this policy, but the courts at this point have blocked it. That's working their way through the courts. But in the meantime, this is continuing. And, this is just a travesty. We need to use every dollar that we have to reinvest in armor and night vision goggles and new airplanes and not be wasting it on sex change operations.
So do you look to the president tomorrow night, do you look for him to call upon Congress to fully fund and rebuild our nation's military?
I do. We were able to, in the Armed Services Committee and with the support of the president, increase the amount of money in the current budget. Of course, we haven't got that final agreement yet due to Senator Schumer and a handful of Democrats that have held up the budget process, but we have pass the authorization to do that. Hopefully that agreement, final deal, will pass within a couple of weeks. And so I certainly expect him to call upon us to finalize that, to get that done. But as we're already starting to look at next year's budget, I'm very hopeful that he will once again increase the amount of money that needs to go to our defense, because it took many years to get where we are, and sadly it's going to take several years to get back to where we need to be.
Yes, but we'll have to be intentional about it. And you're absolutely right. It begins with the leadership of the Commander-in-Chief. Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, as always, great to have you on the program and appreciate all of the things that you do for our nation and for our families.
Well, thank you, Tony.
All right. Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. As I mentioned, we work very closely with her as she serves as the chairperson for the Values Action Team in the House, an entity that we helped set up a number of years ago. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Kathy Roos regarding Planned Parenthood and their future. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. By the way, if you're not already receiving my daily update, which covers a lot of these issues and more, usually three top issues every day that pertain to faith, family, and freedom, you get that free in your inbox every day. Go to tonyperkins.com. And request it, and we'll get that to you, as well as our alerts, which are very important. That way you know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, so you can let your voice be heard and magnify the effort we're doing here in Washington, D.C. So go to tonyperkins.com. All right, Planned Parenthood, Cecile Richards, confirmed in a video announcement last week that she is resigning as president of America's largest abortion provider. Now, as you know, we've talked about it extensively here. Planned Parenthood has come under a lot of scrutiny in recent years for a lot of their activity, in particular, the undercover videos from the Center for Medical Progress, David DeLayden, which revealed that they were involved in this process of essentially trafficking in baby body parts. Congress held hearings into it. They looked into it and recommended charges be filed. And so now we have a Department of Justice investigation into it. Could Richard's announcement be to try to put a new face on Planned Parenthood? Joining us now is Kathy Roos, Senior Fellow of Legal Studies for Legal Studies here at the Family Research Council. Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I'm glad to be here.
So, Kathy, I know, and I'm going to get you to weigh in because you had a piece today written on Planned Parenthood, based upon their own report that just came out. Financially, they're doing pretty good. They're still raking in over $500 million from taxpayers. But do they see on the horizon trouble? And so are they trying to get ahead of that and put a new face on the organization?
Well, I mean, that's certainly one possibility, you know, that Cecile Richards wants to get out before the indictments start coming down. It's got to be, I mean, the Department of Justice is turning up the heat on this organization, a forthcoming investigation into their, you know, video-supported sale of little babies' hearts and brains and lungs. You know, it's the other mainstream media likes to talk about all the know, edited videos and unsubstantiated, but so many Americans actually watch the videos, and you can see the Planned Parenthood representatives haggling over baby bodies parts. So, you know, they have a lot to be worried about. So it could be that. She has been enormously successful, Richards has, in driving up donations from wealthy donors and preserving the tax funding that flows from our pockets to this horrible organization. So in a sense, she's leaving on a high. So you've got this, you know, they're afraid of this investigation coming their way. She may want to get out before that really hits. But at the same time, we hear, you know, the leftists on Twitter are encouraging her to go into politics like her mother did, the former governor of Texas, Ann Richards. And politics does seem to be her forte. I mean, she has turned this Planned Parenthood into a political powerhouse. Nobody denies that.
When you look at their annual report, the data just being released, the revenue for Planned Parenthood is actually up over last year. So as you said, she's been successful. And I think parlaying the call for the defunding of Planned Parenthood to actually increase the amount of donations that are coming into the coffers of Planned Parenthood.
Well, there's no question about that, that there was a tiny, tiny downtick in tax funding last year to the organization, but she more than made up for that with an increase in almost $100 million new donation money from her well-heeled friends. She knows how to bring money into the organization, and she's really preserved tax funding is their major source of revenue. And like you said, $500 million last year from our pockets to theirs. She's preserved that, and she's had tight. Congress has been getting better and better at trying to address this problem, and she's been the one to Congress at bay. And so, it's been very successful in that regard, bringing in money, keeping taxpayer money in, and all of this is reported in their latest financial report. It's right there in black and white where they get the money from. How many babies they aborted last year? 328,000 babies. And their other pregnancy related services have been dropping like a rock under her tenure. And last year was a significant drop. There were just several thousand other prenatal services, I think 7,000 something, versus 330,000 abortions. So it's a 96% abortion related activity versus, you know, 4% non-abortion pregnancy-related activity. There's no question that this is America's abortion giant.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. She has done, from their perspective, a stellar job in keeping the taxpayer funding flowing. Okay. Although I think that the small decrease comes from the local governments that have really been able to get a handle on this. Congress falling just short of the defunding. But I do think they're trying to get out in front of that, because I do think this investigation is going to increase the calls for them to be defunded. Kathy Roos, as always, great to have you on the program. Great piece today in The Hill, and we've got it posted at TonyPerkins.com and encourage people to take a look at it. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Kathy Roos, and the piece, it's an opinion piece. It's on the Hill. That's a publication, The Hill. You can go to TonyPerkins.com and follow it over. Planned Parenthood's annual report is out. Another Unhappy Tale is the title of the piece that Kathy wrote. Look, I think we are closer, and I told this to a church yesterday in Marshall, Texas. I think we are closer than ever to seeing Planned Parenthood defunded. Look, it's over $500 billion, it's a B, of your tax dollars going to the nation's largest abortion provider. And now they're under investigation, potential criminal activity of trafficking in baby body parts. I do think they're trying to get ahead of that wave and put a new face on Planned Parenthood. We can't let them get away with this. We need to continue to pressure Congress to defund them. All right, when we come back, I'm going to tell you about my trip to Guatemala and a special event that I was a part of in East Texas this weekend. So don't go away. We're back after this.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay. Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, the Senate's still debating the 20-week ban on abortion. They will vote shortly on the procedural vote to move toward a vote. I won't go into all the details right now, but Senator Lindsey Graham, actually the author of the Senate version, is on the Senate floor right now. Speaking in favor of the bill. Okay, if we get a vote, I'll let you know. This past week, and I know you heard I was able to join one segment on Thursday to talk about briefly my trip to South America. I was in Guatemala Thursday, met with the president, Jimmy Morales, his vice president, and several key members of his team. The reason, the primary reason for going down there is Guatemala is the only other country that recognized Jerusalem as the capital city for Israel. In fact, shortly after President Donald Trump announced that the United States would be moving its embassy to Jerusalem, Guatemala did the same. Now, somebody say, well, what's so big about that? Well, a lot of opposition. In fact, a lot in the international community immediately began pounding Guatemala. But Guatemala has some history. And it was interesting in my conversation with President Morales. He was reminding everybody that, hey, the Guatemalan people are with me. This is not new. And it's a very Christian country, very strong Protestant presence. Catholic presence as well, but a very strong evangelical presence. In fact, the president is a Baptist and at one point studied at a Baptist university seminary. And in 1948, when the United States was the first nation to recognize the Jewish state, again in 1948, the second was Guatemala. back in 1948. So he said, you know, this is nothing new. We've long stood with Israel. And so we were at a state dinner there to honor the president. A number of Jewish organizations from the United States, their leadership was represented there. And we also had some, again, several meetings. And there were some other things that I'm going to be talking about in the weeks ahead. I'm still doing a little more research and digging. But I found something very disturbing. And, of course, this won't come as a surprise that the United Nations is a problem. But the United Nations has been down there working in many different ways to undermine the government of Guatemala, the administration of President Morales. And again, I don't have time in this segment to go into all the details, but I just want you to know it's something, when you read the headlines, they can be very deceiving. And so there is a history, not in this administration, but in previous administrations, of some corruption, and they've been cleaning it up. And the country is moving on the right track. They've been very supportive of President Trump in the United States. And it's really a kind of an island of conservatism in Latin America, which oftentimes tends not to be conservative. Or also, as they describe, a kind of the line of protection, because they border, their northern border is Mexico. They have a lot of traffic coming across their country trying to get into Mexico to come into the United States. And they have one of the most successful records of drug interdiction, of actually stopping and arresting. They've been very successful at partnering with the United States. So anyway, some very interesting things, and I'm going to spend some time talking about that in the weeks ahead with as I follow up with some more meetings and such with officials from Guatemala. But I want to talk about something else here. And in the next segment, we're going to be going to the phone, so don't go away. But I was came back from Guatemala and went to Texas, went to Marshall, Texas, for really an outstanding event. Dee Farmer, the head of an organization, Prayer Force in Marshall, Texas, where the community teams up with first responders. What they do is all the first responders that want to participate in having someone pray for them, they put their name in. Someone pulls that name, and they begin to pray anonymously for that person throughout the course of the year. And then at the end, they have this big community banquet, which I was the keynote speaker for on Saturday night. About 600 people from in the community of Marshall, Texas, all came together, policemen, firemen, medical, you know, first responders in terms of EMS. And it's just fascinating how the community has come together after 9/11 is what launched this, and they pray regularly for these first responders, for their families, for their safety, for, you know, everything pertaining to the role of a first responder. I was just impressed that this community, a great community, a lot of listeners there in Marshall, Texas, by the way, Washington Watch airs there. And also had the opportunity to speak Sunday morning yesterday at Emmanuel Baptist. But anyway, this is an idea that I think more communities should explore, of actually launching a prayer initiative to pray for first responders. Great idea, and it's had a tangible effect upon the community and the well-being of the first responders. Okay, when we come back, we're going to be going to the phone lines. So don't go away. We've got more Washington Watch after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right. As I mentioned, tomorrow night, President Donald Trump, in his first formal State of the Union address before a joint session of Congress. Here's what I want to know. Are you going to listen in? Are you going to be watching the president's State of the Union tomorrow night? Is it something you want to hear what the president has to say? Are you going to tune in? So let me know. Give me a call, 866-372-7234. Let me know if you're going to be watching or not. All right, 866-372-7234. All right, to share with us what you'll be doing tomorrow night. I will be talking about it. In fact, I'll be at the Capitol most probably. I haven't finalized this, but I may actually give my thoughts live on Facebook afterwards outside the Capitol. So stay tuned for that. I'll give you my take on what the president has to share with us tomorrow night. I mentioned this while I'm waiting for a few callers to come in. 866-372-7234. Will you be watching the president's State of the Union tomorrow night? I mentioned this, I guess, Thursday night, that we saw Senator Sam Brownback, or actually Governor Sam Brownback, former senator, was confirmed along party lines, 49-49, with the vice president breaking the tie. He will be sworn in this coming Thursday as the ambassador at large for religious freedom at the State Department. Had a good conversation with him over the weekend. A very key position. And having someone that is going to bring focus to the issue of religious freedom at the State Department. I mean, in the previous administration, I think, well, they did not care about religious freedom. In fact, not only did they not care about it, I think they saw it as a problem. Unfortunately, there are many holdovers in the State Department. The State Department is the worst of the worst when it comes to the swamp. And they still haven't given the attention to religious freedom that it needs. So now, hopefully, with Ambassador Sam Brownback there at the State Department, focusing on religious freedom around the globe, this will be helpful. And it'll help many persecuted minorities around the world, letting them know that America is back. We're coming back. Still got a ways to go, but we are on the way back. All right. All right, again, 866-372-7234. Will you be watching tomorrow night as President Trump speaks before a joint session of Congress to give his State of the Union address? Let's go to Virginia, where Anna is on the line. Anna, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you. I love your show.
Thank you. Yes, so will you be watching tomorrow night?
Oh, yes. I will not miss it.
What are you hoping the president will talk about?
I hope that he will talk about where he stands as far as pushing back on the leftovers.
Well, I think there's a lot of Americans are going to be watching along with you. I think, you know, the president's put out the team, they've put out their kind of their five major areas. But, I mean, this president is just what makes him so, I think what drives the ratings up so much when he's on is because people never know what he's going to say. He's going to add his perspective in there. And I think, yeah, and I think people find that refreshing to actually have somebody who's not programmed and scripted in everything that they say.
And that's what I really love about him.
I think you're right. I've heard that many, many times. Anna, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. All right, let's go across the country. All right, let's go across the country to Oklahoma City to talk to Ed. Ed, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
All right, Ed, so you going to be watching tomorrow night or not?
I'm not going to watch.
Are you going to be reading afterwards, or what are you gonna? How are you gonna find out what the president?
I will. I'll check the papers and the network coverage and see what he said. But I am not a fan of his behavior. I think his policies and his attitude towards the evangelical community has been great. But I think the way he lives his life and the way he treats people is shameful. And I think it is a horrible example for my grandchildren.
Well, Ed, I think there's probably a lot of folks out there listening that share that perspective. They like his policies. They like what he's done, that he has kept his promises, but do not agree with the way he has said and done everything. So I don't think you're alone in that. Ed, thanks so much for listening in and calling. You know, I hear that quite frequently. I like what the president is doing. I just wish he'd quit tweeting, or I wish he wouldn't say it that way. And I get that, and I understand, and I would do it differently. And as I said in an interview, I think last week, I would do it much differently, but then again, it's highly unlikely I would be president because I would do it differently. I think part of what has made this president, I'm not defending it. I'm only explaining it. I think part of what has made this president successful in getting to office and maintaining the base of support is that, he does some of these things. In fact, I was talking to a doctor today, a medical doctor, and he said, you know, I don't really like the way he says some things, but I know that he's kind of, he's actually saying what a lot of people are thinking. But, you know how it is. Your mother said, don't say anything bad. Well, you know, we listened to our mother. I don't think Donald Trump did. I think he just went ahead and said it. And in part, that's what makes him attractive to a lot of people from a standpoint of standing with him, is that he speaks from the heart. Anyway, I get it. I understand, Ed. Thanks so much for calling. Let's go to Brad in Mobile. Brad, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I will be watching the State of the Union address, and I'll be looking for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to sleep again.
Yeah, that is it. When I was in the chamber for, it wasn't a State of the Union, but he made a speech shortly after coming into office last year. And I was watching.
I'm a medical doctor.
Okay. All right. So let me ask you this. What do you think about the president so far? What kind of grade would you give him as he wraps up his first year?
I give him an A. Not an A plus, but not an A minus, but an A.
All right. Hey, I'd settle for an A. So, all right, Brad, thanks for listening. Appreciate you calling in. Dr. Brad, that is. It is interesting watching when you're in the chamber for these speeches and just kind of watching different ones and watching their body language. And as Brad was saying, those that nod off, it's sometimes comical. All right, let's go to Mississippi, where Brian is on the line. Brian, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good evening, Tony. I'm pretty new at all this government stuff, but I'm a Christian. I'm a believer, and the Lord has turned me on to your show, and it's where I've really begun to get deeper into what's going on with our country and stuff. And I'm going to watch the State of the Union address because, unlike a lot of Christians, the Christians' view, for the most part, is they don't like Trump because of his, morally questionable lifestyle at times. But I believe, personally, that God put him into office. And any time when God speaks, he speaks through, in the Bible he spoke through a donkey. So anytime God speaks, I definitely want to be hearing what he's saying, and I believe that God put Trump in office, and I just want to hear what God has to say, and I give him an A-plus, too. I think we've only begun to see the greatness that is beginning to take place in our country. So,
all right, Brian. Hey, welcome to Washington Watch, and welcome to engagement as a Christian. I think we have a responsibility as Christians to be involved, so thank you, Brian, for listening and being involved. And, to Brian's point, I think it's good to listen yourself, especially those of you who, and I've said this many times, but those of you who listen to Washington Watch are, I would venture to say, most of you are influencers, okay, because you're people in the know. You take the time to find out what's going on. People ask you. You influence other people. So when most of the world is looking at these things through a different lens, it's helpful in getting a take from, in looking at it yourself, or, if you don't have time tomorrow night, I'll give you the highlights of it, Wednesday night. I'll also, as I said, probably tomorrow night afterwards, be giving you a quick take on it. But look at it from the, through the lenses of a biblical perspective. Now, look at what this president has done since he's been in office. All right. I made this point many times last week when I was criticized for saying that when the evangelicals decided to support him, they gave the president a do-over. They said that, look, we know what your past is. We don't like it. Don't support it. In fact, most of us were not there when he was in the primary, but it was only when it came down to a choice between him and Hillary. And then we decided, let's have a conversation with him. And he made a promise that he was going to protect religious freedom. He was going to advance the sanctity of human life. And here we are 12 months later after the election. He's been in office. And what has he done? He's actually done what he said he was going to do. That's remarkable in and of itself. So now there's these allegations that have come up of behavior that took place 10 years ago, which we said at the beginning we found reprehensible. But does that change where we are today? No. I mean, nothing has changed since he took office. He's continued to, from everything I can tell, and I'm pretty certain about this, he has continued on the straight and narrow. Now, again, I give you the tone of his tweets and some of the things he said I would not do, don't agree with. But when you look at his policies, he has stayed on course. All right, going to work another couple more calls. Let's go to Ohio, where Joe is on the line. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Mr. Perkins. Thanks for all that you do. I would give the president an A-. I don't 100% agree with his tweets, but I think we got 90% of the media outlets that are liberal and fake news. You've got to push back, and they would be attacking anybody. If it was Ted Cruz, if it was Marco Rubio, if anybody else, they would be, the liberal media would be attacking them. If you don't have some pushback, and you punch Trump, he's going to punch you back twice. You know, it's good to see a fighter in there. I mean, the left-wing liberal media, they attacked Bush, and Bush never defended himself. I'm talking about the second George W. Bush. They attacked Romney. You know, hell, was Harry Reid goes on the floor of the Senate and lies that Romney's not filed any tax returns. That was a lie, and Romney didn't push back at all. You know, they had Trump is one that's going to push back and is going to fight, and believe me, it's not just Trump. It didn't. If Ted Cruz or Rubio or Huckabee or anybody, any of the other, Ben Carson, any of the other 16 contenders would have been in there, the left-wing liberal media is gonna attack them. And the thing they got the right guy with Trump, because he's going to attack back, and he's not just going to sit there and take it. And, you know, it is what it is. I don't agree with all of it, but I understand we've got a fighter in there. We've got a stick in his corner, and it's going to be a long fight. It's going to be a 15-round fight. These liberals, these fake news are not going away anytime soon, so we got to meet them at every twist and turn, and we got to keep fighting a good fight. God bless you, and thanks for your ministry.
Thank you, Joe, and I appreciate you calling. Boy, you said a lot, and I'll just try to grab a couple of those points. And I made this point, and I was kind of criticized for it, although some have come to my defense and agreed with me, that Christians, as you just said, they're tired of this, and they're glad that there's somebody finally fighting back. You know, some things are worth fighting for, standing up for and defending: religious freedom, the sanctity of human life. Now, there is a way in which you can do it, and I think that's the issue that some people have with Trump, is the way in which he does it. So, I mean, you know, continue to pray for him. He's a work in progress. Can pray that, more and more he's going to come under the influence of more evangelicals, although he has come under the influence of believers in a significant way. It's evidence in his administration. So just pray that grows. All right? Pray. To the point about the media, in that the tweeting is a way to get around the media, without question. And would they do this to another candidate, or, I mean, another president, if it were Cruz, Rubio? Without question. Absolutely. But here's the difference. I don't think any of them, and I was an early supporter of Ted Cruz. I mean, I campaigned across the country for him. I don't think he would fight to the degree that Donald Trump is fighting. I really don't. Donald Trump is a unique individual, and, you know, continue to pray for him. Continue to pray that God would move in his life and in his heart, and that he would be surrounded by godly influence. All right, folks, out of time for today. Hey, sorry we didn't get to all the calls, but we'll talk about this again tomorrow. And thanks so much for weighing in. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.